Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. So we're shooting in the studio today. We're back on schedule.
And for the time being.
For the time being. Just in time for things to get disrupted again for people watching at home. The building that we're in Building 20, is going to get a remodel. And so they're going to remodel the entire building except for the studio, which means it might be noisy. We might have to, hopefully you guys won't notice, but interrupted schedule and might be shooting somewhere else for a short period of time too.
So we can just run a high pass filter through the background. Maybe
No big deal. We'll just remove that. It will sound like we're in a tin can, and and we'll shoot in Gove's office. So maybe we'll do it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. My office. We'll try and get cameras in there.
So we'd have to blur out probably 2/3 of the office.
We're trying to fit everything in there. I don't have a big office.
Yeah, okay.
Your office is 4 to 5 times larger than mine.
Yeah. All right, so let's get started. From Zippy V. Hey, Zippy V, how you doing? Last week I replaced the SSD drive and did a fresh install of Windows 8. A couple of days later, I saw a message from Action Center saying a hard disk needs to be scanned for errors. I click this message to start scanning, and I notice a new process in Task Manager called Microsoft FSA Veil UX. It's in System32. It uses one core of my CPU all the time, but it doesn't do any hard drive activity. What does it do, and when will it stop, and did I pronounce it correctly?
As with many of the OS process names, file names, pronunciation is one of those things that I don't think anybody ever gets right.
It's a hit and miss thing. I'm throwing a dart.
That actually is the scanning utility. So the thing that threw up the error message saying that you must scan the system, that's actually that process that's doing the scanning right now.
And do you think it scanned that SSD?
It's certainly scanning something.
Okay.
The fact that it doesn't appear as if there's hard disk activity doesn't actually mean that there isn't hard disk activity.
So if you open up Resource Monitor and go to disks and you see all the disks there, you should see one that's certainly.
Exactly. You should see one that is getting some I.O.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's using up a core. It's supposed to be using up a core. I mean, it's trying to get done as fast as it can.
And it's going to scan the entire disk?
It's going to scan the entire disk.
So, Zippy, if it's taking a long time, it's just probably a big disk?
I mean, it's an SSD. Who really knows? I'm guessing, 128, 256 tops?
Yeah.
Right?
Unless it's scanning, your 3 terabyte,
Media drive or something. If you have another drive attached to the system, maybe that's the one that detected it's having an issue.
Okay. Is there any way to know how long it's going to take?
No, unfortunately not. We don't have a progress for it.
Okay.
So just, if you can, leave it alone.
Yeah, leave it on at night or something.
Yeah.
See what happens next day, write us, let us know. Cool, from Stav, he says, I had 2 Windows 7 instances running on my PC. I've installed Windows 8 instead of one of them, and the one that was installed on drive T, my main Windows 7 on drive C is still there. I had the 2 Windows 7 OSs configured with a dual boot configuration using the software EasyBCD that skipped the OS selection menu and went straight to the pre-selected OS. Now it no longer is going to the pre-selected OS. How do I make the boot menu not show and go directly to the OS I want?
Okay, so a lot of things going on there. In the end, I don't know anything about EasyBCD. I just use BCD Edit, the command line tool. If you want to change it, you have to, I need this one. Start it elevated. I haven't changed that option yet. As you can tell, I'm running the preview version of 8.1. Nice little icon back. You can right click, you get the WinX menu. Anyways, BCD edit.
You have BSD.
BSD. BS edit.
Sometimes.
This is, what you'll want to take a look at. I only have one boot on this system. What you'll want to do is find the identifier of the OS that you want to be as a default.
Yeah.
And then you just do BCD edit whack default that.
Okay.
You can also change the timeout. There's numerous TechNet articles on the various options of BCD edit. So you can always make it just do a zero timeout, boot to that default, and away you go.
Okay. Cool. From Chris, we recently moved to Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7 in our school. Everything has went pretty well apart from the proxy. In XP Server 2003, we had a setting enabled forcing local addresses to go through the proxy, therefore preventing users from accessing local device settings pages using the IP address for them of them. For example, accessing a printer, switch settings, web interface by IP. However, now that we've upgraded, this setting is being ignored, and therefore users are able to access local device IP web interfaces. Is there a solution or workaround for this?
So he's talking about going to the internet options, connections, LAN settings, this bypass proxy for local settings.
Yeah.
This only applies to named resources, so URLs, that's an actual name.
Yeah.
It does not apply to dotted paths, so for IP addresses. However, there is a solution, but it's a little bit different from modifying the system. What I would do is actually set up a transparent port forwarder. So all addresses that's a port 80, mm-hmm. you can have it on your switches in your network infrastructure that would transparently forward that to your proxy server and make it do the determination of whether or not it's allowed. And you can do that based on access control lists, for the user that's happening, you know, different logins for it, or different machines. You can even do it that way. So, you know, if you're an admin, from your administrative workstation, you may want to always not go through the proxy, right? But you could actually lock that down, and there are numerous third-party solutions out there. The ISA firewall or threat management gateway, to, I don't know what it's been renamed to, can also do this. It's just basically a transparent filter, so all port 80 or port 8080, depending on how your internal web management software for those different devices are set up, you can just have it transparently forward to your proxy.
Cool, okay. From Eddie, I noticed that all the folders in my profile, Windows 7 64-bit Pro, are shared, and the properties on the sharing tab, it shows the network path. That really bothers me as I'm not sure who can access them, and sometimes I see in the permission everyone. I don't have any users defined on the PC except mine. Because I'm the only one using the PC, it has no username or password, so I assume that nobody can access it. But I'm still concerned about the shared files. I tried turning off sharing of files and printers in the advanced sharing section, but the folder remained shared after that.
Okay, so a lot of things going on that one. But I want to address the last statement first. When you turn off sharing of printers and files, mm-hmm. all that really does is sets the firewall rules up so that they don't access the SMB shares, or you know, you can't automatically go to any shares on the system. They just won't show up. You're, when you're trying to do a double backwhack machine name share path, it just won't be able to find it.
Yeah.
So that's all that does. Now, the other thing that he's talking about is having no username or password, mm-hmm. No password associated with the username. By default, if you have that set up, you can't access shares either. So you can't go double backwhack share name, input the username, and just hit enter. It won't allow blank passwords by default. So that's one thing, that's a second bit of addressing of this problem. Third one is you want to be able to see what shares are available. Mm-hmm. You can do that through management, the computer management snap-in. So you go out here and you go to shared folders and you can see all of the various shares that are open.
Yeah.
And you can delete them here. Please do not delete the admin $C or IPC $ shares.
Okay.
These are admin shares. They are used for management reasons. There are some backwards compatibility issues in some software if you do delete them.
Yeah.
But you can't normally access, like the $C, you actually have to be as an actual admin, logged in as administrator with elevated privileges in order to access the share anyways.
Okay. I mean, as a user, it doesn't know. You'd look at that and think, wow, I don't want to give people root access to my main drive.
Right, which, again, by default, we don't just give out root access to the
to
non-admins.
Yeah.
If some of the other background here, and I'm reading between the lines, is that he really doesn't want anyone to be able to get onto the network and snoop his system, essentially, right? Yeah. So, I mean, if you have Wi-Fi, that is a risk. I wouldn't say it's a huge risk if you're using WPA2 as your Wi-Fi encryption. So always go to the highest level encryption that you can if you're using Wi-Fi. If you like to have a semi-open Wi-Fi system where you know your people are coming over, you want to let them access to your internet, I highly recommend setting up a guest Wi-Fi VLAN segment on your Wi-Fi network. A lot of newer routers nowadays make this super simple to set up. They're simply designed to not give access to the rest of your network. It's almost like API isolation. Some of the routers have that access point isolation. It will simply allow that machine to get access to your WAN port. That's it.
Yeah.
So you get internet access. It can't talk to any of the other machines on your network. And that way you can have like a weaker password for that one, or you know something that's constantly rotating, which is you know what I would do.
Yeah.
For people that are coming over, it's like, you know, maybe change it on a weekly basis. That way people aren't necessarily leeching off of your Wi-Fi. But it's something that's easy to set up and they don't need access to the rest of your network.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. From Nicola, I share a computer used for travel with a few colleagues and would like to protect my password manager, license keys, and other files. Since we all need to have administrative access to the machine, setting file permissions is not a solution. Using an encrypted container file and mounting it solves only part of the problem since my settings, browse, cache, and auto-run is not protected. Is it possible to use file encryption, not BitLocker, but in file properties dialog, to protect NT user dat and other files on my user folder? When I try, I get an error message, access is denied. Can you suggest how to get around this or another way to protect my files?
Yeah, I love this question. I could probably go for a while on this one. But I like to refer to this wonderful article that many people have contributed to over the years on Security Tech Center, The 10 Immutable Laws of Security, version 2. I'm actually unsure if there is a version 3. This was the latest one that I found. It all basically boils down to, if you have admin rights on the machine, all bets are off. If you have admin rights on the machine and physical access, all bets are even further off. There's really not a lot that you can do if you're saying that they must have admin access. So I would
It's a completely different user account? They have admin access to their user account on a machine, but you have admin access to your
user account. No, if you have admin access, you have admin access to the machine.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Different user, it makes no difference.
It makes no difference. If you have admin rights to the machine, you have admin rights to the machine. Its entirety. You have admin rights to the OS.
Yeah.
To its entirety.
So you can just browse over to their cache.
So you have to kind of ask yourself, what are you trying to really protect against, right? If you have sensitive information on your machine that you don't want to have other people that have admin rights on your machine to ever get access to, there is only one solution. Don't store that information on that machine.
Yeah.
Store it on a USB key. Store it on a BitLocker USB key, right? Or here's another option, which I particularly like. It sounds like perhaps this is a enterprise-ish setting, right? BitLocker to go.
Yeah, I was thinking Windows to go, run everything off a little thumb drive, boot the machine off
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. So the machine is shared, and you have your entire own machine. That would be probably the most secure thing that you could do.
Yeah.
That way it really doesn't matter. If you have a machine that is configured for secure boot, right, you're talking about the most up-to-date security messages that we could possibly get. Secure boot, it has UEFI, it has signed code, it's only signed UEFI, so you can't inject stuff into that. With Windows to go, you know, it's your OS, you're not letting anybody else run it. It does not interact with any existing OS that's running on the machine.
It's always in your pocket.
Exactly.
No one's got physical access to your machine.
And
it's in your pocket, even though you're using shared hardware.
That's right. And the Windows to Go drives themselves, depending on which drive that you use to do it, can actually have encryption built in.
Yeah.
So you cannot use it on other machines. You can actually lock it to a TPM on a particular machine. So there are a lot of things that you can do depending on how paranoid you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But again, please refer to this list.
All right, we'll link to this.
This is a great list. I always look at it in terms of What are you trying to protect against? How much effort are you willing to do? And when you, again, start to think about it, as has been mentioned a lot lately, which really should not be a surprise to anybody, is that your machine is not an island unto itself.
Yeah.
Like, it connects to a network. It connects to the internet. You know, what do you do when you connect to the Starbucks public Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
right? Are you certain? Are you 100% certain you're actually connecting to Starbucks public Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, I've been in some hotels where I see the Wi-Fi, and it's like, well, that seems like the Wi-Fi that the hotel would have me connect to. But I'm like,
do you really know?
Really? Is there a guy in the next room with a router who
That's
just
right.
called their Wi-Fi network the hotel name?
Exactly.
And
right.
sometimes there's some that are kind of sketchy, or it's like, too, and it's like, is the hotel running two Wi-Fis, or?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have a Windows machine, Linux machine, any machine, be a soft AP, soft access point, right?
Yeah.
Where you might be connecting to it, and it is now inspecting your packets.
Yeah.
You never really know. You know, you can, again, go to the next level and set up a VPN, IPsec VPN, even better,
mm-hmm.
right? So yes, there are things you can do, encrypt your channel, but there is going to be points along the way where perhaps your path is not necessarily encrypted or is going through a man in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You never 100% know.
Okay, all right. You've taken the wind out of my sails with this one. All right, from James. Love the show, I watch every week. I've installed a TPM, Trusted Platform Module, in my motherboard, and it's recognized in the BIOS
Yay.
Perfectly, as well as in the device manager in Windows. I was able to initialize the chip fine. I can encrypt drives that are not the C drive. When I attempt to turn BitLocker on the C drive, I get an error message as displayed in the screenshot attached to this email. You will also notice in the same screenshot as a dialog box showing that BitLocker is currently encrypting another drive that is external. My OS is 8.1. Any ideas what's going on here? First off, for people who don't know, can you talk about TPM a little bit and what that means to the average user?
So TPM is a Trusted Protected Module. It is the thing that will actually store the encryption keys in hardware
mm-hmm.
That will make it easier for BitLocker to work, to decrypt your system on the fly. When you enter in your creds.
A lot of machines just ship with TPM built into
it. Enterprise machines especially. So you can get ones configured from Lenovo, Sony, HP that all have TPMs built in. But there are, you have to potentially go look for them in consumer models.
Yeah.
Because they're not yet default.
And the benefit for us as Microsoft employees is if we're connecting to CorpNet here
mm-hmm.
or to a domain, having a TPM chip can alleviate you having to have your card and a card reader
right.
and some things like that. So it makes it a little easier for
yeah,
us.
For us, what we can do is basically have a soft smart card
mm-hmm.
or a virtual smart card is what they call it. And our certificate that we use that is read off of a smart card for our two-factor auth is basically stored in the TPM.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you don't have to have your smart card when you're doing RAS access or direct access. But, you know, for this particular machine, for example, I have it, but there is not a lot on this machine.
Yeah.
At all, really.
And if you don't have a TPM chip on your machine, it's something you can add. It sounds like that's what they did.
Some motherboards can have a TPM daughter card added, like a plug-in module.
Mm-hmm.
Not all do. And the really tough part if you're building your own machine is while the motherboard might say it supports it,
yeah.
trying to actually find that module can be a real pain in the butt.
Yeah.
sometimes you go scrounging for it on eBay or something, but they don't make it very clear all the time. So if you can get one that's already integrated on your motherboard if you're building a system, or if you're getting a laptop, which I would just prefer, look for that. The other thing you can do is for Windows 8 systems, look for ones that are pre-configured for secure boot.
Mm-hmm.
If you have secure boot, you got a TPM.
Yeah. Okay, in this case, can't encrypt C drive.
So the issue for this particular fellow was that his system was set up in UEFI mode, and his TPM appears to only properly work in BIOS mode. So he had to actually wipe the system, switch it over to BIOS mode, and then everything was golden after that.
Cool, awesome. All right, from Andre, I found a new issue on Technic forums, which I have no idea which causes it. The user gets an icon on the taskbar with the text DWM notification window. What's causing this?
So DWM creates a hidden window by default.
And DWM is?
The Desktop Window Manager. It's the thing that composites the desktop. It will basically take windows, draw them off screen, layer them together the way that it's supposed to be visually represented, and composite all on the visual screen that you're seeing. So it'll take all those bitmaps and slap them together, overlay them.
So if you see an icon for that on the taskbar, something's wrong.
Something is wrong because that is supposed to be a hidden window. It's not supposed to be displayed. So it looks like there's something running on the system that is arbitrarily or potentially arbitrarily unhiding windows that it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you what it is because there's not enough information. We'd have to debug it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. From Dave, I have an old Dell Latitude D630 with 3 gig of RAM and an updated SSD drive. I had upgraded it from XP 32-bit and upgraded to Windows 8 Pro 32-bit with no problem. I needed to run a 64-bit version of Windows 8 to program for Windows Phone. I tried a trial version of Windows 8 Enterprise 64-bit. The system runs, however, I'm unable to run some Windows 8 apps like Skype and video and music, and I can't play any of the videos from Channel 9 shows or blogs. I need to download VLC and view downloaded videos from Channel 9.
There might have been something odd about that particular eval version because he came back later and said that he did a fresh install of Win8,
mm-hmm.
and everything was golden.
Okay.
So I'd have to know where that eval version came from exactly.
Yeah.
It might have been time-bombed. It might have been built slightly different, so it couldn't get the updated store versions of the modern apps.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly couldn't tell you. I've never, ever installed an eval version before.
Yeah, but Dave's good now, right?
Yeah, Dave's good now.
Next question. I just bought myself a new computer. It seems that something is keeping it awake and will not let it turn the monitor off or go into sleep mode. How can I detect the bugger that will not let my new computer sleep?
We probably talked about this on the show before, but it's worth mentioning again. PowerCFG, WAC Energy, will run a report that will display and save to an HTML page. This will run for a minute. We don't have to keep waiting for it, but it'll tell you where it outputted the HTML file from. And if you notice, I started this, I ran the elevated CMD, and I left it in C Windows System 32. It'll save that HTML file into System 32. If you try to double-click on it, and you try to get IE to load it, it won't load it because it won't load HTML pages from System 32. You got to copy it off somewhere else.
Okay.
Just so you know.
All right.
But, yeah, this report will show you the various things that are keeping it awake, and you can see what processes that's running it, that's keeping it awake. I mean, obviously, if you've gone into the power options and you've left it as balanced or power saver, if you chose power saver, and then switch back to balanced, and as long as you haven't mucked with anything in here, you should be getting sleep. So I would say it's either a driver that's keeping it up.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to update your video drivers. So if we try to do this, I believe IE is not going to display it. Yep, this page can't be displayed. It's a wonderful little thing that IE does. Now let's play it.
Love watching the maestro work.
So you just basically look at this analysis result, the various errors. So, yes, I have purposefully turned off sleep when I'm plugged in.
Yeah.
Because I don't want the system to sleep while we're doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or while I'm in a meeting or,
you
know. So go through this list, find everything in pink.
Okay.
That's causing an issue. Look at the warnings. And basically, you should be able to resolve it from there, at least see what's going on.
Okay.
I'd love to see a result of your Energy CFG if you send it in for something that can't sleep.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. All right, pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. And this one is an article about forget 3D printing. 3D subtraction is going to be arriving in your garage first. Yeah, this looks kind of cool. This is a new device called HandyBot. The gist of the article is that while 3D printing is cool, there's an old school method that subtracts away from an object. So instead of having a 3D object that you're building one piece at a time, mm-hmm. which ends up being a little weak depending on the properties of the material you're 3D
and
printing
and your design.
With. Yeah. there's also a way to do things where you take like a block of something and whittle away at it, and it's called CNC routing. And this is how they make different devices, different parts for cars and stuff like that.
Well, this is how they make molds as well for
yeah,
things.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And it's a much stronger, in most cases, it's a stronger material because you start off with a block of material that you've whittled down instead of starting off with nothing, building it up from a 3D printer. And the idea behind this is...
And these are also solid.
Yeah, and I've been wondering about this for a long time. My father-in-law does CNC stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a very computer-intensive task because not only is the computer looking at, like, all right, well, how do I need to whittle this away? But it's like it creates a path. Like, how do I make sure that this drill bit doesn't, dull in 2 seconds? Mm-hmm. So it creates a path. It's a very computer-intensive process. And this is kind of an entry-level step into this. But it's not taking a block of wood, which, I wish it would. It's not taking a block of wood and carving it into some 3D object that you have that I can see. It seems to be just like a CNC router that's computer-operated. So if you were going to just, like, route your name into a piece of wood, it looks like it'd be good for that. Mm-hmm. But, like, if I want to have, a Russian bear that is, like, a 3D thing built out of a block of wood, it doesn't look like it does that, but, maybe someday. But it's kind of cool. Check it out. It's definitely interesting from the sense that it should make routing things. Like, if you do kitchen cabinets and stuff like that, you should be able to do it a lot faster with this, a lot more accurate, and a little bit more detailed than you could get by hand. So looks really interesting, and yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it looks like, using it in construction.
Yeah.
And, on-site kind of stuff, where you'd have to potentially do, like, larger orders in order to get a manufacturing place to do it.
Yeah.
Here, if you're bringing it out to a job site, you can, do it yourself. But, yeah, I'd like to see where this goes for more three-dimensional, as you say, what I would call, like, the Michelangelo version of it, where you're...
Yeah, let me make a statue out of wood.
Exactly.
Very cool. So, check it out. It's got a Kickstarter crowdfunding effort there. I hope to see more stuff like this. Keep it coming. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com or leave a message in the show notes, and we'll get back to you there. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.